What's for tea tonight? Now, your next guest might be able to give you some inspiration or maybe make you lose your appetite altogether. Jacqueline Newling is an honorary associate at the University of Sydney. She's also an historian with a degree in gastronomy, and she's been poring over old Australian cookbooks to gain some insight into our food history and our attitudes towards food today. But she's not just reading these recipes, she's actually making them herself. I'll introduce you to Jackie shortly. And lots of you are responding to the question, what meals do you remember eating once that seem to have now fallen out of fashion? This from Wendy in Geraldton. Back in the 60s, Mum cooked up tripe, kidneys, lamb's fry, in brackets liver, brains. My memory is they were disgusting. For me, they were never in fashion. Thank you, Wendy and Gero. 0448 922 604. Let's say good day to Jackie Newling. Jackie, hello to you.
Good day, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Now, what sent you on this journey to have a look at the gross meals of yesteryear?
Well, it did come from my interest in food and food culture. I've always been interested in why we eat what we eat, and possibly more interested in why we don't eat some things. So there's lots of edible stuff out there, but we're often quite picky about what we include in our menus.
Okay, so can we pinpoint why foods go in and out of fashion? Is it to do with supply, or is it more to do with attitudes?
Well, I think this is what's wonderful about gastronomy. You know, it is talking about food, but it's going way beyond, you know, food as a substance. It involves all the cultural and social aspects around it, and that includes environment. So yes, different people in different places will eat differently because of their environment, and that might depend on their own circumstances, but also what is available in places or not available in places. Refrigeration and food, you know, food safety has a lot to do with the types of things that we have eaten in the past and the way we eat now, and also social ideas like class. You know, we can be a bit food snobbish sometimes, and, you know, just simple economy as well, you know, what our means are.
Lots of response.
So there's all sorts of things that are coming into play.
All right, let me read some of the texts that are coming through. The meals that we're used to indulge in and have probably fallen out of fashion nowadays, brawn, pressed tongue, tripe, brains, says this correspondent. Jack says tripe and onions, and it was delicious. Another writes tripe and crumbed brains. Krabby says, I love a good lamb's fry, liver, kidney, onion and gravy. Deliciousness to me, says Krabby. 0448 922 604. Now, you've tried some of these older recipes to see how they come up. Let's talk about mock turtle soup that you made with a whole calf's head. Why did you decide to take that one on, and how did it turn out?
Well, you know, mock turtle, you know, sounded like a curious title anyway, and most of us know the mock turtle character from Alice in Wonderland, which looks like a turtle but actually has calves feet and hands, well, you know, feet.
Yep.
And so that you know, shows how strongly mock turtle played a part in popular culture in the 1870s when the book was written. It was a classic dish. It was in every recipe book. It would have been on almost every table, and yes, it is made with a calf's head. So
How did it come up?
Not something that we would normally find in butcher shops, and certainly not supermarkets these days.
No, so, was it nice?
Well, the whole idea, it was actually very rich, and you know, the whole idea of it being a mock turtle. Turtles were extremely rare and expensive, and sort of only ended up on royalties tables. The turtle, which I have not tried turtle soup, I must say, but it's known for being quite gelatinous. The lip smacky, if you like, and the collagen, the natural collagen in the calf's head and the bones, because it's such a bony cut, make the soup very silky and kind of gelatinous. So it carries the same qualities, as well as being really quite beefy and robust.
Okay, so in this era of we're sort of getting back towards utilising every piece of the animal, do you think it's got some legs to be resurrected?
Well, I guess this is one of those moral questions, isn't it? So we know that we breed animals to feed us, and we know that breeding animals, or you know, the way we farm now, the way we breed animals for the table now, is environmentally unsustainable. And so I guess we need to start thinking about how much we value meat. Should it be you know, as cheap as it often is today, or should we be respecting the animal a little bit more greatly and realising that there are a lot of edible parts of an animal that we send to pet food or go into blood and bone, or, you know, some of those sort of extraneous products. Perhaps they should, you know, be better respected and be on our tables.
Now, by cooking these foods and these old school recipes, is that putting you back in touch with where your meal comes from? And is that part of a reason why potentially this could be supported to be resurrected?
Well, the reason, as a historian, the reason I like to actually make these things is it's one thing to read about something, but it takes on a whole different dimension when you actually get hands-on. And so what I found from making these things, one of your messages before mentioned brawn and tongue. You know, peeling a tongue is really quite a very sensory process, and brawn is made from a pig's face or pig's head, and the only way to get all the edible pieces off is by hand because of all the contours in the face and things. So, you know, sometimes I was a bit grossed out by it. I still feel a bit squeamish sometimes by handling these types of things, but I also think that that's a very good thing because it's something that we naturally avoid these days. We don't need to, you know, so much of our food is already processed and literally ready to take out of a packet and straight into the pan. We barely need to touch it. So I think it's important for us to realise that there's this sensory quality to these foods, and, you know, we shouldn't put ourselves above that reality, I suppose, of being literally face-to-face with our food.
Okay, what's next? What's the next one to try for you that you've got to, you know, get your brave suit on and face your demons?
Well, a lot of people talk about our food futures and, you know, how there's a lot of protein foods that we don't regard as foods at all, but some other cultures do, and that's sort of moths and insects and creatures like that, and I'm still a little hesitant. I have tried them from time to time when I've been in a very safe environment, but I haven't ever gone out and sort of, you know, harvested my garden snails.
Okay. Right. Well, good luck with that mission.
Maybe that is my next challenge.
Good luck with it. Yeah, leave the cockroaches alone. Yeah, or maybe not. All right. Thanks for coming on, Jackie. Cheers.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye now.